Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, and this podcast is your guide to start creating a lifestyle by design. From entrepreneurship, money and finance, taxes and residencies, and everything in between, this show highlights the nuances of a true global citizen lifestyle. Let's dive in. Michael, welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I am so ready to dive into your story and what you have created for yourself today. So let's dive right in. Share with me a little bit more about your story, your journey.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much. You know, my story started as a kid growing up in Jamaica, and it was not the most ideal situation that I embarked upon. So, you know, grandparents are from Cuba, other grandparents are from England, but a flood, and that flood took everything from my family, had us sitting on the roof of our house, and that left us temporarily homeless. 2 years later from that, we went through Hurricane Gilbert, Category 5 hurricane, and you know the devastation of a hurricane could do. So it killed over 300 people, and my mom and dad lost everything again, and they just said that this was enough, and we can't deal with this anymore. We can't raise our kids in this type of situation. So they made a decision for us to go to America, but the consequences of that separated our family. Being from the Caribbean islands and things like that, back in the 1980s, probably in the 70s too, well, you need someone to like file papers for you with through a visa and all the passports, things and stuff like that. So I went by the way of New York, and me and my siblings went to Miami, Florida. So we were separated and got to America, came to Overtown, Miami. And if you were to pull up Miami, Florida, back in the 1980s, was rough and crazy. So it was nothing but the area was nothing but like drug dealers, prostitution, you name it. And I got picked up by my family members, my aunts, and we were staying with them in Overtown, Florida. Unfortunately for me, the first night in South Florida, I was experiencing some childhood trauma that no kid should ever experience. And it left me traumatized. 2 years later, I joined the Boy Scouts. We went on a trip to Washington, D.C. I came out of the bathroom with some of the other boys on the wall, saw them naked. I was told again, and I got beat up, bruised, traumatized to the point of it was just unbearable to deal with and bodily, you know, that stuck with me for a very long time. My mom removed me from the Boy Scouts, and being immigrants and not understanding how laws go and all these different things in America, we didn't understand all of the things that we could have done or should have done. Fast forward, once I got to high school, you know, I played football. I was pretty good. Had hopes and dreams of going to the NFL. And that got cut short, tore my ACL and MCL back-to-back years. And we weren't financially well off or anything like that. So when it comes to knowing all of the things you need to navigate when it comes to going to college, we didn't really understand all those things. So the next thing that I chose was to join the Marine Corps. I had always had an affinity to join the service, and met with a recruiter, learned a lot about the service and what the Marine Corps stood for. And I said, I want to be a part of this fraternity. So I joined, went through boot camp. Lo and behold, I got there and went through Marine combat training. And being a kid from Jamaica in Miami is super, super hot. So being that it was hot, I experienced, being that I would come from that climate or where that culture is at, North Carolina was at -3 degrees when I got there. So I went through frostbite and I found myself in the hospital from hypothermia. You know, when 9/11 hit though, it was crazy. And I knew that the possibility of going to war was imminent, and that did occur for me. I got blown up by a car bomb in Iraq, put my best friend in a body bag, and that really affected me to the point I just started bottling all of these different types of emotions and feelings that's been like stacking up over these. Anyhow, after experiencing getting blown up at Iraq, putting my best friend in a body bag, my transition out of service was not the best, you know. So I struggled with mental health and PTSD. So I struggled with being a parent, being a husband, which led to 2 divorces. And, you know, brought me on the brinks of heavily drinking, being on 13 different medication, and thought of taking my life. But that was at the moment where I decided to change my life, you know, and just started changing and just being much more vulnerable and transparent with all of the things that I needed to heal with. And that's what I did. And once I did that, my life just started flourishing. Business started flourishing. My friends started flourishing around me. with the right people around me. And from there, I was able to write a book, talk about my life for overcoming adversity, able to make a TED talk about it. Just from there too, as well, just started the company, the Adversity Academy, to the point where now we're a firm that's out here helping people just getting through some of these struggles, where we're creating the better cognitive thinking.
That is quite a journey, as you know. So there's a lot we can unpack in that, but I want to, you know, your whole mission and life purpose is adversity. So, and overcoming that adversity. So in your journey and in what you teach as well, you know, we've all been through some type, whether extreme, maybe not so extreme, some type of adversity in our lives. What were some of the tools that you used or that you have in your toolbox to help overcome that? Because I can imagine that going through even half or a quarter of what you have been through, many people would not be able or potentially not even want to overcome that. So what does that journey look like? And what were some of the tools that you had to come back?
Definitely. So what I did, I really didn't know what to do, because it was not until I was on the verge of taking my life that I sat in that dark room and I was thinking about, how did I get here? And I started doing some self-assessment, started auditing myself and understanding, am I blaming people or am I blaming my situations, and how can I handle that? So the first thing that I started to have to do was taking accountability. And from taking accountability, what are some of the actions and things that I need to start putting in place to fix some of these things? Because it's affecting so many things with the outcome of what I'm doing. And what I started doing and implement it with what I teach, and I call it the 3D, decision, direction, and destination. And ultimately the destination of where I wanted to be in life, and started looking at what were some of my past decisions that I was making and what are some of the new decisions that I need to start making. What was the direction where my life was going, which brought me to the brinks of almost taking my life? And what's the new direction or trajectory of where I need to take my life? And lastly is the destination. And the destination is, what do I want to create? What do I want to be? How do I serve my purpose? And what does that look like? And started creating that blueprint, started creating that strategy of what that looks like. And that's how I started getting much, much clearer with what needed to take place for myself. So for myself, you know, I went through counseling and I started working with various counselors to unpack lots of these traumas, these unforgiveness, this pain, this guilt, this shame that was all stored up within my heart and within my mind. And I didn't have anywhere to release that or share that with. As you know, some men will not talk about some of the things that I just shared with you earlier. So that was one part. So I went through counseling for, I want to say, a solid 10 years I was going through counseling. When I got out of the military, it took me 7 years to even see counseling. It was not until I seen someone try to commit suicide and kill themselves where it brought me to that reflecting on, like, the next thing that I did was I wanted to understand what occurred to me, because I walked around with a lot of survivor's guilt from Iraq, knowing that I was 10 seconds away from getting blown up and that could have been me. And when I went to Rush University Hospital, I started learning more about PTSD, traumatic brain injury, the cognitive thinking, neuro-linguistic programming, all of these different things I wanted to learn about, train about, and understand the meaning behind some of these things. Why, you know, and ultimately understanding all of these things that took place with the things that veterans deal with. Back in the days, they used to call it shell shock for guys that went through Vietnam and all of the world wars and things like that. And the stigma around mental health and PTSD was that no one didn't want to talk about it. So I was the one that fell into that and was like, I'm not going to tell anybody I have mental health issues. I'm not going to tell anyone that I'm thinking about suicide, or I'm having flashbacks, or I'm having bad dreams and these types of things. So it was a struggle trying to deal with that, but I had to face those things. Facing those things also led to me changing my circle. So I found that I was around the wrong people, and those people influenced some of the decisions that I was making. And once I started changing that to having mentors, having counselors, having accountability partners, having people that was going to pour into me and serve me at a higher purpose and at a higher level.
So I'm curious in you saying all of this, and
I love in you saying this, your curiosity as to why you were feeling that way. I'm sure that there are many who don't have that curiosity and just kind of live with, oh, this is how I'm feeling and that's it. But I think it's very insightful and probably intuitive of you to have a curiosity as to why and to start seeking out those answers and to then from there say like, oh, I am in control of making this change. But I'm curious, do you think that you could potentially not have or had a much more difficult time overcoming everything without counseling, professionals, a new community that you were surrounding yourself with? Is this something that is possible to do from within?
I believe that first and foremost, you have to learn how to accept that something is wrong within yourself first. And knowing that you're going to need some help, you know, because how did you get to the situation or the place that you're at now by yourself or around the people that was with you? So take an assessment and an audit, like as I said earlier, is if I did all of these things and it was not helping me, how can I find a way of people serving me? And I think through the multitude of people that is willing to help you, this world is full of like givers if you're willing to ask for help. And that's what I had to do. I was a very prideful type of person that didn't really ask for help. I was the big, bad, tough Marine that didn't want to talk to anybody, those types of things. But once I started opening up and started being much more transparent with things, I found that there were so many people that was even dealing with some of the same things that I was dealing with and that was willing to help me. But it starts with yourself first. You can't pour into anybody else and help anybody else until you start filling up your cup first. And that was where it started for me.
All right. So thank you for sharing all of that. Very, very insightful into your journey and, you know, anybody else who's going through something similar. And so I want to transition into talking about you building a successful business, being a TEDx speaker, having all of these great accolades to your name. So what did building up the business aspect look like for you from the beginning to today?
Sure. So this is the fun part because I remember the struggles of what it was like to build up this business. What I would think about oftentimes is seeing my grandfather back in Jamaica, this guy from Cuba, from nothing, and he built up a construction company to build. He built my family's houses back in Jamaica. Then I just saw how he built many other people's houses from an entrepreneur aspect and the caring part and the loving part of always wanting to help people. Then my grandfather, my other grandfather that came from England, he was a doctor, and he came to Jamaica and opened up his own practice and started helping people. And then following that, my dad, he started opening up his own business and started running his own business as well. And I said, all right, I see that entrepreneurship was already in my family, in our blood. When I came to America, you know, I've always been a kid that's always been, like you said, curious, inquisitive, grinding. So my mom told me one day that, you know, if you turn in these soda cans at the recycling center, they'll pay you like 10 cents a can, 20 cents a can. And I was like, oh. And I was a big time football fan. So I like Dan Marino. So I like to collect baseball cards and football cards and things like that. So I said I wanted to get the next Dan Marino card. So I started like collecting cans off the street, just walking up and down the streets on Saturdays. My friends are playing football. They're playing video games. And you see Michael with the trash can walking up and down the street. I used to get picked on, did not care. I already knew what the goal was for myself at that time. And I'm not the type of person to too much worry about what people think about me as well either. The next time was we're in school and I noticed that after lunchtime, kids were getting hungry and the vending machines were running out of candy and food. So I came home one day and I told my mom, I said, hey, can we get some candy? I like to sell candy in school because the kids want some candy. And we went to the Costco's here. We bought like the candy chocolate bar called Zero and Payday. So we bought those in bulk and I was selling those in school and started making a profit off of that. And I said, I got a little hustle going on here. Anyhow, I learned a little bit about like managing money and just different of like capitalizing on different situations. And that's some things that I learned and I took in once I got a little bit older. I had an opportunity to work at Papa John's Pizza, and I was making pizza, got pretty good at making pizza. And this was around the time I was getting ready to go off to plan on going to college and join the Marine Corps. I've already committed to join the Marine Corps, but I was such a great employee. They offered me to be a manager to run the store and to help open up a franchise, because this is when Papa John's just was getting started. And obviously I turned it down. I probably would have been probably a big franchise owner now if I would have stuck around back then, but it is what it is. When I talk about business though, you know, I didn't get into business late, but I'm glad that the opportunities I had in life helped me start a business. So I joined the Marine Corps, and serving for 8 years taught me a lot. At age 18, I was learning how to lead. I was learning how to manage so many different multi-million dollar equipment from the government. I was learning how to do things with, when it comes to like logistics, transportation, learning all of the different administrative types of work, things that I didn't really put too much value on, learning how to communicate with people, learning how to talk with higher ranking people from different levels within business. If you take the military aspects out of it, learning how to be on time, learning how to be prompt, learning how to be sharp, learning how to dress, all of these different things that people don't even think about at such a young age. But I learned so many of these skills at such a young age. And then going to war and just learning how to understand and deal with things at a high stress level, learning how to not get complacent with yourself was some of these skills that we don't think about when you're pushed against the brinks and you're being challenged, how to apply some of these. Out of the service, I worked on a railroad. So this was one of the coolest jobs that I've ever had. A kid with no college degree or anything, I was able to manage and work with customers and clients. So now I'm learning all of these different things with the employees, especially I had unionized employees. So these are employees that work for you, but they're under a union. So it's different rules, different regulations that you had to study. You had to learn in regards to like having these different types of relationship with older type of men. At this age, I'm 27 and these guys are 50s and 60s. And it's a different way to communicate with older men or older women that was in this space. But I was in charge of managing the train from Atlanta, Georgia, all the way down to Macon, Georgia. And when you think about the performance, the connections, all of the vendors. So we were carrying your BMWs, your Mercedes-Benz, your Chevys, your Fords, all of the products that women put on their face, and all of the trees and the logs and all those. I was managing all those things and making sure they get to the right customers on time and just doing a phenomenal job at that. And just working with the crew that's building these trains. These 150-car trains, tons of things that's traveling across America, things that are coming from your imports and exports. It was pretty amazing just to learn some of these skills. And then I went to government contracting, and this was pretty cool because when I was on a railroad, I was able to help work on a project, and I helped install some new railroads and able to save the railroad close to over $25 million on a project that I was working on. And it was in regards to like raising the track speed and reducing the fuel efficiency and reducing the overtime for the employees on the railroad. So fast forward that, I got an opportunity to become a project manager and a contractor in Washington, D.C. And this was the time during like the Obama era. And he had a whole bunch of new changes and new things that they want to implement. So I had the opportunity to put tons of multi-million dollar projects or software inside of all of the VA hospitals. And as a veteran, that was near and dear to me, where I felt like I had some stake into this, where I had to make sure these projects are on point delivering. So just managing things from a portfolio level as a project manager, when someone is giving you over $200 million of money just to manage across the whole entire United States. So that was pretty phenomenal just to learn that. With that being said, I left there after 15 years, and I said, I'm going to try something else and give back to veterans. So I decided to become the director for military and veterans affairs at Florida Atlantic University. Great job. I had the opportunity to work with now students, but veterans that was getting out of the service and didn't really know what to do and was struggling with either their benefits, their GI Bill, and all of those different types of things. And so now I had the opportunity to work with different type of level of management. Now you deal with trustees and these type of people when it comes to like the school environment and now the student aspects of things. And I did that for like another 5 years. But once I got to this point in my life, I said, man, I've done a lot. I've worked for all these people and I've been delivering and giving. And I need to serve myself. You know, I've developed all of these skills that I've gained from all of these companies, but I think it would make sense for me to start pouring into myself and now create a legacy that I could establish, create a legacy where I could give back to my kids, create a legacy where I could have a company that sits just like these railroad companies, create a legacy where we could establish something, but now I could give back and help people. And that's where I said, I'm going to start this company, the Adversity Academy. And doing that, I was able to take all of those skills and get this company up and running in a year. And 90 days, I wrote my book. 90 days, I did my TEDx. From there, I started working with different people and staff to get all of these different types of things that you don't think about when starting a business when it comes to either your marketing, your communications, your finances, you know, you name it. So all of the commerce types of things that you need to get a business up and going, and establishing the right relationships too as well, creating these programs, creating these videos, all of these different things you need to do with social media. So it was a fun process to get things going, but I actually love and enjoy the journey, especially when you see the impact that you're making with people.
And it sounds like if you hadn't have had all of that experience and learned so much along the way, even what you were talking about in the military and learning these very transferable skills, maybe the trajectory of your business. So now when we were speaking off air, you mentioned something that was very interesting to me, and I want to hear your perspective on that. And that was when you started being in the workforce, but maybe more notably when you started your own entrepreneurial venture, you started learning how to manage your wealth, manage your business, manage your money, your finances. And maybe that happened before you had your own business, but you mentioned to me that you started thinking about how the Donald Trumps of the world maintain their wealth. You said setting up a trust, setting up life insurance. So talk to me about what this journey looked like for you and how you valued the importance of it as well. You know, what kind of clicked in your mind to be like, this is something that's important that I need to learn? And then how did you start learning about how to set up a trust and why life insurance is so important?
The thing for me was when I was younger, I used to see my parents get life insurance, and I never really understood the meaning behind it. And I realized when I first joined the military, one of the first things that they do is put life insurance on you. And I said, all right, well, this must be pretty significant or important for everyone to be getting life insurance. In addition to that, you know, when I was getting ready to get into business, I did not completely get into business per se. I was working at FAU and I was working my 9-to-5, but I was sacrificing my evenings. And I was preparing and getting ready to start my business. So I was doing all of the extra work and all of the research and things like that. And what I've started from my reading, from my mentors, so I have mentors that was schooling me and helping me, telling me all of the things that I need to do. And what I started to realize, whenever you look at some of these successful companies, right? So most companies that start up usually fail within 5 years if they're not set up correctly. So I was saying to myself, what are some things that I need to put in place so I do not fail within 5 years? What are some things that I need to create for the longevity of this business? So taxes, you got to make sure your business is structured the right way and how to handle your taxes. And then I said, who is one of the best persons out there that I've seen to manage your taxes? And it works out pretty great for them. And I saw how people come after Donald Trump all the time. And he learns how to leverage his taxes, and it could never get a penny or a dime out of this guy. And he does it legally, and it's all legal. And the funny thing is that so many things are written, but we don't read it and we don't understand it or comprehend it. And tax is set up to be, I think it's set up to be a very complicated thing where you got to hire. So I started understanding, all right, well, he does this. Why did he do this? How did he do it? Oh, he has a trust. And I was like, oh, okay. So you could defer taxes infinitely. You could defer taxes and you could show that you only make X amount of dollars, certain amount of years and things like that. And it's legal. It's not illegal. So I was like, all right, so this is the strategy. If you want to be a successful business owner, maintain your money, save your money, and allocate funds in different ways and things like that, which is another strategy of how you need to do these types of things. In addition to that, you need to learn how to create different types of agreement with yourself and your business. So you could do different types of loans within your business, right? You need to learn how to separate your personal and your business funds. You need to learn how to separate your, because you need to get an EIN for your trust. So your trust is another entity that has money too as well. And some people don't even know that, you know? So you got to learn how to play the money game in these different pockets, in these different silos. And once you understand that and learn how to put money here for personal, for business, for trust, for taxes, it makes it a whole lot easier. Now, there's tons of professionals out there that know how to do this, and it'll help you a whole lot in the long run. Also, if you know how to track these. So using the platforms like your QuickBooks, if you want to use Excel, you can, but there's plenty of different platforms of tracking this. But long story short is I learned how to understand the meaning behind a trust and how to use this trust to structure and let my business fall into my trust, right? Learn how to create the insurances. So like the insurance is set up where they carry cash values and things like that. But the longevity or the long-term thing of what it does is this. So when I pass away, I have $1 million life insurance, for example. I could take that $1 million and put it into my trust. So the trust stays, so the money stays in the trust and it continues to fund the family, continues to fund the business to keep it going, opposed to that $1 million comes out, you give it to this family member, that family member, that family member, and they blow it. And those are some pitfalls that you don't want. You can set up the trust where X amount of family member has to graduate to get this amount of money. This family member has to come into the business, start the business, maintain the business, do all these things, or else they don't get it. And it goes to the next family member behind them. You know what I mean? So you could structure things to keep yourself wealthy. You could keep your family wealthy. And that's what your Rothschilds, all of these different wealthy family learn how to structure life insurance to put inside of their trust and just keep the legacy going and going. That next family member has to get a life insurance. So that life insurance funds the trust. That next family member has to get another life insurance. So that keeps funding the trust on and on and on and on, opposed to just getting the money.
I'm curious, how did you learn this? Like, yes, you were curious and you had the curiosity of, okay, people are retaining their money and not paying that much in taxes. Like, there is a way to do it. But what did that look like for you?
Well, I worked through two different companies and lawyers. So I got with these different companies, got with these lawyers and say, hey, this is everything that I have. This is everything that I have going on now. But the plans that I have in the future, this is my family member, this is my wife, this is my kids, this is all of the investments that I have, this is how much money we're making. And then from there, we put all those things inside of the trust. So the trust is a legal document that is honored by the courthouse. So you have to get, once you get the trust created from your lawyer or from a company that does it, make sure it's, make sure you have irrevocable trusts, and you have, there's many different trusts out there, but you have a revocable and an irrevocable trust. So you want to make sure you have the type of trust that's going to stand up within a courtroom. And what you'll find is that, for example, if you think about Michael Jackson, he didn't have a trust. What happened to all his money? James Brown didn't have a trust. What happened to all of his money? When you think of Kobe Bryant, didn't have a trust. What happened to his money? But when you think of people like O.J. Simpson, he has a trust. He's not dead, but he still maintains to be a millionaire, right? Because he has a trust. If you think of some of these other people that are rich and wealthy, that has been through stuff, like I mentioned, Donald Trump, they still maintain their money. So you got to make sure that a lawyer set it up for you correctly, that knows how to do these types of things, so you can be set up for the long haul. So once that's done, you have to go get an EIN, and EIN is done through the IRS. So I did that, got that through the IRS. Then after that, you set up a bank account, whichever bank that you go to. When you go to the bank, they're going to ask you for certain types of documents from the trust. You don't need to give them the entire trust. You just give them the sheet that the trust itself, you have to get it notarized. So you take them that sheet that is notarized. And after you get that sheet taken in, then you file that, put it in your safe, or you make a copy. What I would recommend, what I did was I sat down and I had a family meeting. So I told my kids, I told my wife, this is what we got. This is what we have going on. And these are all of our assets, right? So everybody's on the same page and no one doesn't have any floor for any questions to be asked, and let the kids know. So this is super, super important. These are some things that's within this trust, right? When you guys get to this age, you guys need to get a life insurance. When you guys get to this age, you guys need to maintain this trust, because when we're dead and gone, this needs to carry on. And I'm pretty sure those are conversations that Trumps are having, or many other families out there that do have a trust is having this conversation. And I don't think this is a conversation that's being held in many households. And I think it's probably we're doing a disservice to our families when we're not doing these types of things.
There is such a misconception, which is true and unfortunate, where you don't want to talk about life insurance because it means that you're going to die. You know, it's kind of like these more, you don't want to talk about wills because it means you're going to die. And you don't want to talk about trust because you don't want to talk about money and it's taboo.
Yeah, financial literacy of things. I think family are more comfortable talking about cars and houses and clothes. But when it comes to some of these serious real life things, we avoid it. We don't want to talk about credit. We don't want to talk about bills. You know, we don't want to talk about some of these things as important as those other things.
Yeah. And I find it on that topic, I find it very interesting because I lived in China for quite a few years, and it's such a cultural thing because in China, they will, and I was taken aback at first, but I did eventually get used to it, where they will just come right up to you and be like, how much do you make per month? How much do you make per year? What's your salary? You know? And so for us in Western culture, that's very like, oh my gosh. But then when you actually take a step back and you think, wait, why does it matter to tell? It doesn't, you know, if it's someone that you trust and not, sometimes it is a complete stranger in China, but that's just normal for them.
I think that comes back to the scarcity mentality and not understanding like things are out here in abundance for us, especially if you share information too as well. But I don't know, maybe if it's a way to get past that, it's going to have to start at a younger generation where we're educating our kids to start not having that type of mindset and start sharing. Because I notice we all want to hoard things, you know, hoarding information. And that's where the problem is, opposed to what you're saying towards being in China and some of these other. Being able to face adversity in life, I think we all have to step up to the plate, because it's what's going to shape us and not break us. You know, if we're willing to go through it and face it, it makes you so much stronger and so much better, and gives you that confidence that you're able to get through anything. And if you never do it, then absolutely. So the Adversity Academy is theadversityacademy.com. If you want to look me up as well, it's michaelwallison.com.
You've just listened to the Work, Wealth, and Travel podcast. If anything from this episode resonated with you, I would appreciate if you share this podcast on your socials. And of course, be sure to tag me. And don't forget to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this global citizen journey, and I'll see you in the next episode.